Blog Talk Radio.
This is the ACAC Radio Network. Welcome to Ministry Beat, a show designed to highlight the latest happenings here at Allegheny Center Alliance Church with your host, John Stanko. This program will focus on people, events, and current ministries at ACAC, a vibrant urban congregation in the heart of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And now, here is your host, John Stanko.
Well, hello out there in internet radio land. This is John Stanko, your host, for yet again another rendition, another episode, installment of Ministry Beat. I always have to think because I have two other shows, and one is Leadership Talk, and one is Urban Heroes. Then I have two shows on AM. One is, again, Leadership Talk, Westmoreland County, and the other one is Wake Up to Purpose. I always have to stop and think, okay. And usually I have either a screen in front of me that says what show it is or a notebook or something so that I don't get confused. But today we are going to have probably a little longer show than usual, because we have two guests who will be on today. One is Pastor Sheldon Williams, and Pastor Sheldon will be talking about a special event that we have coming up this Sunday, the Sunday after Super Bowl Sunday, and that I will also be involved in. And then we're going to have Michael Day, and Michael Day is our young musician who we all see sitting at the keyboard during worship. So talented. It's just not fair that he would have all those gifts and all those talents. And so he's going to be, you know, and like I did with John Walton, I want to interview him because these are folks who bless us every week, but we really don't know that much about them. Who are they? What makes them tick? How did they get to be where they are today, being with us at Allegheny Center Alliance Church and ministering to us and ministering with us? So we want to talk to Michael today. We want to talk to Pastor Sheldon, and we'll just see where else the show may take us. I went to church last Saturday night, so I'm not sure. I saw a lot of folks Saturday night who were usually there Sunday, but because of the weather report, they came Saturday. And I'm not really sure the weather report panned out the way we were told it was going to, that we were the way that creates a panic. But anyway, the one thing you learn in church work is that if you do have a snow out or people don't come, they generally don't make up with their giving the following week. So it's just another way to trust the Lord. But anyway, it was there Saturday night, and Pastor Rock preached a great message on, it's not that I don't remember his message, that I just got a text message. So praying on the same page, and I thought he had some great things to say about prayer. You know, prayer, I was talking with somebody on Monday about the message, and prayer is a tough thing to preach about. I did a series one time on prayer, and I think the people were more confused after I was done than before I started. Now, that could be a function of my inability to teach or my lack of understanding, but it seemed like I had dismantled prayer into all its components. But I just had this thought that if I dissect a frog, I have all the parts of a frog, but I don't have a frog because I don't know how those parts work together. And I felt like I had dissected prayer. I could see it in the dish and me with the scalpel and marking all the parts. Pray early, pray in Jesus' name, believe what you're asking for and you'll get it. And I think the people were kind, but I think they were more confused at the end. So I thought Pastor Rock did a good job, made some very salient points, and so they talked about agreeing and what that exactly means, and if we're agreeing, how it may not be what the Bible is really talking about, where obedience and agreement in prayer is concerned. So we had that that went on this past Saturday. It was just a time for me Saturday night. I connected with so many people. And, of course, because now I'm not on staff and I'm going to different services or I'm out of town on weekends ministering at other churches, a lot of people, and if they missed the time I was there, some people were, well, we haven't seen you in a long time. And even though I had been the previous Saturday night, that didn't seem to affect some of them. And then, of course, this week I will be there on Sunday because we have a team going to Kenya February 26th, and I am meeting with them every other week now before we go. So I will be there this Sunday. And then we have a special event that Pastor Sheldon's going to talk to us about when he calls in. So I'm going to save that for when he does call in, so we can chat then about that. Now, let's see. We got some things going on. February 14th, which is a week from this weekend, we have during the Saturday at 6 service, Sat at 6, we have a chance for spouses to renew their marriage vows in the Saturday night service. And following the service, there'll be a cake and punch reception, and Pastor Iraq and Karen will be teaching the waltz to those who are present. So if you're married and you want to renew your vows, just let the church know, and that's Valentine's evening, February 14th at 6 o'clock. Now, that same weekend is the spaghetti dinner fundraiser for our young people. So you can, if you're going to renew your vows, you can come Saturday night between 4:30 and 6, have a great spaghetti dinner, then stay for the service, then go back downstairs for the cake and punch. So that is the spaghetti is dinner is Saturday, February 14th from 4:30 to 6, and Sunday, February 15th from 11 to 2. You buy your tickets, all the proceeds after they pay for expenses go to the youth summer missions opportunities. So growth group says, do you want to have a meal with your growth group? This is a perfect opportunity, and we can deliver. So they'll bring the dinner to you on Saturday or Sunday, February 14th or 15th. And last year, if I remember correctly, we raised about $2,500. And this really goes a long way towards helping not just our young people, but the their escorts and chaperones who go with them, who are also raising support with everybody else. Now, I should have mentioned yesterday was a landmark day in that we began our 91 Weeks with Jesus program, encountering our Savior through His Word. And we are encouraging you to, all of us, to be on the same page, be listening daily to our updates on the Word. And the following Sunday, whoever is preaching will preach some aspect of what we have looked at together in the previous week. So, for example, in 3 weeks, I will be preaching, and during that previous week, we will be looking at Genesis 23, chapter 23 through chapter 32. So I am free to pick any story, any topic from those 9 or 10 chapters, and so we will have read and listened to all of them together, the commentary to all of them, and then we'll hear a word preached out of that particular passage. So I'm really looking forward to it. I know you are too. Hundreds have signed up to be a part of it. So that began yesterday. You can access online commentaries, the daily devotionals, or you can order CDs from the church and listen to it like that. That started yesterday. Now, what else we got? That, boy, we're busy. The night before all the festivities on the 14th and the 15th of February, that's Friday night the 13th, we have a worship uninhibited, and that is in a time of extended corporate prayer and worship in the chapel. That's from 6:30 to 8 o'clock. That is on February 13th, and there's another one on the 27th. And let's see, we have a family fun night on February 21st. Again, the Sat at 6 service will feature a special sermon. Oh, it will? Okay, that's good to know, because I'm preaching that night. So this fun night for the whole family will take place immediately following are they saying my message is not fun? No, that's not what they're saying. All right, the baby bottle campaign. Don't forget, if you took a baby bottle as part of a fundraiser for Women's Choice Network, and we have ours sitting on our counter in the kitchen, we need to bring those in this weekend. Also, check out the bulletin for some short-term mission opportunities. One is to St. Petersburg, Russia this June, and one to Paris, France this coming August. Hey, cool. Cool places. And those are a part of our Alliance Envision missions trips. You can find out more about those in the bulletin. There is Kelly Eichenberg's email address, whom you need to write to get the information. And lastly, because I'm seeing that Pastor Sheldon is on the line, we have a Deeper Life in Christ conference March 16th to the 20th at Grove City Alliance Church. Dr. Rob Reimer is leading the church towards renewal and restoration with uncompromising boldness, and they are inviting us to be a part of that Deeper Life in Christ conference. Again, more information of the bulletin. You know, we cut down our bulletin, and it's still chock full of stuff because we're chock full of activities, and they're all good, and they're all contributing to our process of discipleship. But right now, we want to bring Pastor Sheldon on to talk about a special event that we have coming up Sunday night. Pastor Sheldon, good afternoon. Welcome to Ministry B.
Hey, Dr. John, how are you today?
Very well. Long time no see. How are you doing?
Yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah, since last night, maybe. Good time together, by the way.
Yes, we did have a good time. We went to the Pitt game last night. But before we get into the event, you had a special event of your own for your family this past weekend. Tell us about that.
I did. I was honored to observe my daughter graduating from basic training in the Air Force. She has followed in my footsteps. I am still a serving member of the Air National Guard. She recently signed up, and it was just a special moment for me and the family to observe her make that huge step and to see how God is just really doing a great work in her life, her moving forward and into the steps that he's laid before her, and her just growing up becoming a very, very distinguished young lady. So a very proud moment for us, the family, to see her just not only graduate, but do so with all the military, drill and ceremony, and seeing her follow that and all the discipline. It was just a great, great opportunity for us to observe. So, yeah, thank you for acknowledging that. It was a huge moment for us.
Mm-hmm. And what are her orders now? Where will she be?
She's still located, we don't give out their locations just because of operations security, but she will still be at one of the Air Force bases, continue her military training, and then she'll return and she'll just be a drilling reservist. So she'll maintain her training at one of the bases here in the United States.
Nice. And what will those minimum reserve requirements be? What does she have to do once she's a reservist? Is it every other weekend, once a month?
Yeah. She's actually she's 1 week in a month, drilling 1 week in a month, and then you have to do 15 military days a year, and that's just your standard duty unless you're on orders, additional orders, or on call that can call you up for service, or you're activated. And the unique thing with Air National Guard, the National Guard component of Air Force, and there's also an Army National Guard, but there's a state and a federal responsibility for Air National Guard's members. They not only have to answer the call to any federal responsibility, but any state disasters or state call-ups, they would also have to serve. So it's a unique opportunity to serve in two capacities when you're in the National Guard.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned to me last night that you are particularly proud and impressed of this generation who are signing up, because there's a big difference now than when you signed up 10 years ago. What's that major difference, and what's the distinction?
Yeah, 10 years ago. Yeah, that's a long time. The distinction, very long time.
People fill in the blank.
the difference is I went in 1987, so my choice to serve the country, fill in the duty to serve the country, was pretty much at a time of peace. We didn't have a whole lot of huge conflicts. There's always some background activity that happens, but nothing major, no declared wars or whatever. So the generation post 9/11 forward, who answer the call to serve their country, I'm particularly appreciative of their call, when them answering the call and commending them in their service, because they're doing it at a time of the world in a very chaotic state. There's all the wars that are going on, continuation of the wars going on, and you never know, we're on the fringes of some other conflict that's ready to erupt. And so because they go ahead and feel the sense of duty and answer that call, you know, it's just an extra layer of appreciation that I extend to the generation that can answer that call in such a chaotic world.
Mm-hmm. And you're still on active duty. I mean, you're still in a reserve, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I'm trying to finish all my last few years. I had a break in service. I served for some time, and then I didn't serve. And then I went back in 2007, trying to finish out and finish well. And the older I get, the harder it gets to maintain my military bearing. But trying to finish well. So I got a couple more years to do, I think. 5 more years I might have to do before I can reach that retirement age.
Okay. All right. Well, enough of that. We've got a special event coming up Sunday night.
Yes.
And we've got a panel discussion coming up at the church. Talk to us about what was the strategy or philosophy? Why have we put together what it is that's coming up this Sunday night?
Well, you know, Dr. John, the media and news reports are just full of instances, these very egregious incidents in the news that and they've pretty much surrounded race. I mean, a lot of police community interactions and levels of force, use of force. And so those were kind of the open door, the gateway to some of these discussions. But a lot of media start rallying behind the impact of race, and that became some of the discussion points. Race is not a new issue. It's just one that became more talked about because in light of these incidents. And so you're looking at how people relate with one another and how they view these things. And depending on who you talk to, you'll get varying degrees of perspectives as to what was right or wrong or appropriate or whatever. So because so many people pretty much were either seeking to be problem solvers, or they were rallying to be unified behind a particular viewpoint, or they were holding on to some sort of polarizing viewpoint, it still was very energetic in the amount of conversation that was surrounding those incidents as it involves race. And so I personally had participated in numerous panel discussions and had received invitations to come and speak about these matters because of my background, being a former law enforcement and now a pastor. So I am able to speak from two different types of perspectives, one from the community, also from the law enforcement community. So through those invitations, and seeing the excitement and the intrigue and interest on these panel discussions, internally, some of our members would come to members of leadership and ask questions, is the church going to do anything to have an opportunity to discuss these matters? And at the time, in the latter part of last year, we felt the timing of that didn't fit us. And so we didn't want to rush to try to put something together to have discussion on that. And we wanted to have a more holistic conversation, not just on police community relations, even though that's important. We wanted to have a holistic, the impact of ethnicity or race, its impact in our society, and how do they approach that, how are they challenged by that, how they navigate it, and have a broader discussion. So that's kind of the context for what we're going to do this Sunday evening, was to give an opportunity for the congregation to come and be exposed to various perspectives as it relates to the impact of race in our community. And so we've titled it A Growing Discussion, hopefully going to have several other in a series of discussions that we want to have surrounding somewhat the base topic, but we'll probably use different panelists. It's called A Growing Discussion, and this first one is Living in a Racialized Society. And so given that title, we've asked some special guests to accompany Pastor Rock and as navigate these discussions and have some questions directed to provide some perspective. And we've invited a very, very gifted moderator to come and to help
Amen.
Us to navigate
Amen.
These questions.
Preach it, brother.
Yeah, that's very probing and provocative, and he knows how to extract information and extract information from people by presenting good questions. So we're hoping that it's a very engaging time and engaging in this matter, that individuals who come and are in the audience would feel one of two things. They either feel challenged based off of what they've heard, challenge them in a way to think differently. But also, it would also broaden perspectives. The goal is to have people grow in a way that they probably would not have grown, whether it's in knowledge or in effort or in capability or in relationship or in community. Just grow in a way based off of some of these starter conversations that we're going to have. And so that's the goal, by having panelists come from a variety of backgrounds to give a variety of perspectives related to this issue of race in our society.
Yeah. Are you free to say who our panel is going to be?
I can, because I have confirmation from all of them.
All right.
So, yeah, I'm free to say. First, we have Pastor Rock will be joining the panel, and this is a rare opportunity for our congregation to hear from him, and just not in a preaching context. So we like to give as much opportunity for individuals to be able to hear Pastor Rock in a way just not with delivering a message, and this is a great opportunity. So Pastor Rock's one of our panelists. We also have the U.S. Attorney for this area, U.S. Attorney David Higdon, will be joining us. So we like to say he's somewhat the federal chief law enforcement officer of this region, and he's one who's very interested in community. His work tirelessly at making good connection between community and the law enforcement community, has some initiatives on from his office to make sure that he's intentional about that. We have Mary Esther Van Schura. She is currently the Director of Community Affairs for the county, and she will be joining us, has a huge background in social justice issues, speaks to a lot of things, that has worked under numerous administrations in addressing issues as it relates to some of the things that impact a variety of people in our community. Currently, she's working on homelessness and veterans, and, you know, so there's a huge component of perspective she could speak to. We have Emma Lucas Darby. She's a former professor from Carlo University, and she's currently the president of the Citizens Police Review Board. She has a long history of just educational background and speaking to specifically. I think she won a couple of awards and things, so she has a great background in education. And also, we have delighted to have Councilman Daniel Lavelle joining us. He has portions of the north side. He also has the Hill District, but portions of the north side is his responsibility, and has always worked to make sure that there is fair and equitable treatment provisions made, and just putting forth efforts to make sure that all the people of the community have a proper opportunity to be engaged in the proper way. So we have a very good span of panelists who will be coming to share their perspective.
Yeah. Now, it's this Sunday night at 6 o'clock, right? And it'll be in the sanctuary. What can someone expect if they come? What's the format going to be? What do we hope will emerge?
Well, what we're going to do is, open our doors at 5:45, and people will come in. And we're really hoping, we've solicited for just some interesting conversations. This is probably the first time that people will hear about the panelists. We weren't keeping it a secret for any real purpose other than to make sure we maintained or gained our confirmations. But we were very intentional to try to address, religious background, education, government, law enforcement, and social justice. So we were very strategic in that. So we're hoping when people come, they will be able to hear some questions being presented to the panel that were submitted by some of our own congregants, and we're soliciting even more as we speak, and then you can pick and choose the appropriate questions to present. Hopefully that they would spark some conversation. We're really looking for extended debates on things. This isn't any type of political forum. We're trying to provide mass amounts of information shaped in people's perspectives, just to challenge our own perspective. So we're hoping that people will come and be like sponges. And so they don't have to accept all that's being said, but hopefully they hear all that's being said, and then, you know, be able to navigate that through whatever filters or whatever processes they see fit. But hopefully it doesn't cause them to hold firm to a particular viewpoint or perspective they have when they came in the door. We hope that they will have the opportunity to at least receive some information that allows them to expand their perspectives and moves them to a place where we could continue to enjoy and pursue unity in our communities.
So we're really asking people, you know, leave your axes at home. There's nothing to grind here. And we're coming to dialogue, and we're coming to listen. And we may agree or disagree, but it may be a different way of thinking. And we are just to, you would like us, the pastors would like us to receive that and reflect on that, chew on that, not necessarily change our mind, but at least be open to new perspectives. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. I mean, there's no real action points to be accomplished at the end of our time other than I was willing to think differently, or at least be exposed to information that may cause me to think differently. And I say different doesn't mean you have to move from some healthy way or you were thinking before, but let us not grow content with what we've been able to accomplish. Let us be motivated to try to do even bigger and greater work, because the world still is a chaotic place. We still have these issues that are prevalent in our community. There's still many barriers that we need to overcome. So although we have great strides, you know, that we've seen very great success as it relates to people with different ethnicities and backgrounds being able to overcome prejudices and discrimination and perspectives and biases, doesn't mean that we don't come with our we still navigate those because we're human. So let us all take opportunity to see, is there a way that I could grow and I could do something better or different than I've done or approached it before?
Yeah, and listening is such a key. And that's you know, as I've worked in the urban community, I've had to view myself as a missionary of sorts. And I go in always as a learner. If I go in, well, I'm here to set everybody straight and to share my perspective, then I miss what's going on. And there's always opportunities to learn so that we can be more effective in the ministry that God has called us to. Pastor Sheldon, I'm going to let you go, but why do you think ACAC is positioned to host and to do what we're looking to do on Sunday night, and that is to lead a discussion on living in a racialized society? Why are we perhaps better suited than some other congregations to do this?
Yeah. Oh, great question. I like to say that, if I could frame it, I believe ACAC is a comfortable place to have such uncomfortable conversations. And so when you try to introduce the conversation around race or ethnicity and its impact, you'll have varying degrees of perspective. And sometimes they can just cause a bunch of angst and could end up leaving those conversations and not be helpful at all, hasn't moved it to any helpful place. So we are, based off of who we've been over the last 30 years, who we've endeavored to be, based off of the vision of our current pastor and making sure that our congregation is intentional about it, we have created an opportunity to grow as community, a diverse community that seeks to walk and journey together, to appreciate who we are in our ethnicity, our culture, our backgrounds, our, you know, whoever we are, we can celebrate that with one another. But we're also able to have the opportunity to connect with people who look differently than what we look like and that are different from us. And so if we're already beginning down the road to be intentional in that area, to hold conversations that can potentially be a point of debate or challenge or someone who may not see it the same way, it's good to do it from a place and a foundation where uncomfortable conversations can be had in very comfortable places. So that's why we selected to do so.
Yeah, and you know, and obviously we're a cross-cultural church and ministry, and by intentionality, and I always think of you know, the Sunday after Barack Obama was elected, we had our members and attenders of color to stand, and we laid hands on them, and we celebrated with them and prayed for them that this would be a part of the healing process, realizing that, you know, I mean, God is the healer, but still there are things in society and in our culture that have transpired that we need to seek reconciliation and healing. And for me, it was a very special event. It didn't matter what my politics were. It mattered what my values and my theology was. And my values and theology are about reconciliation. So it will be a privilege to be a part of that Sunday night, 6 o'clock in the sanctuary. Still time to get your questions in. The theme is living in a racialized society. Can we go public? Can I put on Facebook now who the panel and the guests are going to be?
Yeah, that'd be fine to do.
Okay, because I've actually had questions. I've had questions on it today because I posted it that I would be moderating and figuring the ACAC people would pick up on it, and they have, and they say that they're coming, and so I'd like to follow up. You were going to say something else. Go ahead.
Yeah, you said intentionality, and it's such a great term to be intentional, and I'd just like to quote something that Pastor Rock said to me when I came on staff here as part of the leadership that I was honored to serve with you prior to your departure, and also Pastor Blaine and Pastor Rock, that he said that being intentional is somewhere in between tokenism and wishful thinking. And he says to want to do something and do nothing is just wishful thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And to do something without really thinking it through and with purpose just ends up being tokenism. And he says intentionality is somewhere in between both of those. And I think that's such an appropriate statement. To be intentional, you don't do it just because you think you should do it and it's the thing to do. You do it with the right intent because it has purpose and moving you down the road and not just thinking on it. So just a good one, good quote.
Yeah. So, well, I'm going to go back and listen to this interview again, pull some points out of this that we can use as we set the stage on Sunday night. I'm looking forward to it. Really privileged to be a part of it. And I'm sure we'll be talking throughout the week getting ready for Sunday night.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Thanks for the time.
All right, brother. Take care.
Right.
Welcome back.
Have a good one.
Thanks. Bye-bye. All right, Pastor Sheldon Williams talking about our program this Sunday night, Living in a Racialized Society, 6 o'clock, a panel discussion on the impact of race and relationships. And so I'm looking forward to that. I've prayed all my life that God would put me in situations where I can make a difference and trust that I will be in one of those places Sunday night. You be praying that God will use that time to bring healing, to bring understanding for all of us. Because none of us are coming with answers. We're coming with questions, and we're coming with our eyes fixed on the Lord. Let's go ahead and bring our second guest on now. I think he is here and on the line. Michael Day, is that you?
That is me.
Oh, welcome to Ministry Beat. I finally got you. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
No, it's good. So you calling from the office or home? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from my car on my way to prepare for a studio session later on tonight.
Very good. Oh, the life of a musician. You guys work all night and then you sleep all day. I forgot how you all work best. So, listen, while we're making the segue, obviously you are a man of color, African-American, working in a predominantly white church. What's, as a musician, And as a Christian, and as a minister of the gospel, what does that represent for you? Is that, I don't want to say special, is it challenging, is it unique? What? Just talk to us a little bit about the experience of being immersed at the culture at ACAC of what we're trying to do in bringing people together.
I think one thing for me and my generation, it is something that we long for. Especially as a musician, you're pretty much always in a diverse culture, either if that's through music or if that's through your ethnic groups or culture of, you know, genre of music. You're always in different environments, but it's always a good thing to have it in the house of God. I know with me, with my background, I was raised Pentecostal, which was predominantly black, preacher's kid, you know, both of my parents are preachers, are very musically inclined and all that. But after a certain age, I started having friends of all different colors and all different cultures, and that my music drove me to that as well, just because I wanted to learn different type of music. I had to learn different type of music, being a student of Kappa and Duquesne. I had to learn from Latin, salsa, all these different type of genres of music, which made me have to be around that stuff as well to learn it, to get the feel of it, to understand the culture, to understand the history of each genre of music. I had to be around those type of cultures to do it. So I appreciate it.
Yeah. Did that enrich you as a musician, as a Pentecostal young man? Did that challenge you, stretch you? Was it a little edgy at times, or was it something that musically and spiritually just felt right and made sense for you?
In the culture that I grew up in, it could be a part where you want to stretch out to bring diversity to a culture, but you couldn't because the culture was set on what it was known to be.
Yeah.
So you learn to, okay, how can I grasp, or how can I be really culturally diverse? How can I express that gift that I'm learning to be a part of? And that's even for me being a young man married, once I got married, we decided to be really making a real intentional decision to be a part of a diverse ministry like ACAC, where we can express our gifts, where we could be a part of ministry as a whole, where it doesn't just look like just me and my wife, Amber.
Yeah. What's the experience been like? How long have you been at ACAC now? What's it been like for you?
It'll be almost 2 years at ACAC. It's been well. I have enjoyed my time at ACAC. One of the things I do appreciate is because of the diversity, not only just in culture, but background. We have a lot of different people coming from different backgrounds of what we call church. Some Presbyterian, some Catholic, some Pentecostal, some Baptist, some Methodist, some Lutheran. And so there are different disciplines that each denomination brings, especially in the music field, that you can see and hear, and you can tell, okay, well, you come from a more Presbyterian style, which brings a different discipline compared to a Baptist background. So you begin to appreciate people bring people comparison, you know, in a certain, you know, style of music, where you might go to a Lutheran church where it's pipe organ or a straight piano, and that's all you understand or get. You can appreciate, okay, this Sunday or this song might be pipe organ, this song might be acoustic guitar, this song might be a bunch of synthesizers. So you can appreciate just the diversity in style of music. So that's what I learned to appreciate more and more.
Yeah. All right, you've given us, it's kind of like Google Maps, you've given us a real high view of your life. Let's zoom in a little bit. Tell us, you know, obviously you're from Pittsburgh. Talk about, you know, growing up. Where did you grow up? You mentioned a couple schools, Kappa, my alma mater, Duquesne. Give us a little more detail. Tell us about, tell our listeners about Michael Day.
I'm a Southside guy. Over in Mount Oliver, Mount Washington side of the area. I grew up there majority of my life. I am a baby of six. Many people don't believe that, but I am a baby of six. And I went to, like I said, Kappa and Duquesne for a few years before I went on tour. You name it, I do.
Yes.
Every instrument I could play. I've been playing since I was four, the drums. That's how I got in Kappa. I wasn't even a piano major. I was a drum major at Kappa. And it just took off from there. I've been playing the drums, part of my grandfather's church. When I started at four, I started directing this choir at eight. I started playing the piano. Actually, I started playing the organ before I started playing the piano, because our piano and our keyboard was down for a season, and so I started learning the organ, and that's because my mom and father, well, my dad was pastor and helping my grandfather pastor first, but my mom, she started being a travel evangelist, so he used to play the organ for the choir and everything like that, so I had to get up there, and my brother, he would get on the drums, and I started playing, tinkling on the organ, and so here we are almost 20 years later, doing what we do best.
Mm-hmm. So tell our listeners, what is CAPA? They may not be aware of what that is.
CAPA is Creative and Performing Arts of City of Pittsburgh. It's a performing arts school for talented and gifted kids. Actually, there's a middle school called Rogers on the east side of town where you can start at middle school level where you have majors from vocal majors, you have instrumental majors, you have dance majors, you have theater majors, you have everything that you think can, ballet, dance, all these different giftings that kids would do.
Wow.
The only thing we don't have in Rogers and Kappa is an athletic program, but the good thing about that is they have also a program where you're able to still be an athlete at your home school. So my home school over here was at Carrick, and I was able to play football and track, run cross country for track team of Carrick. So they give you that option as well. The first half of the day at 9 o'clock, you have all your academic classes, and then from, let's say, 1 till 3:30, you are in your majors.
Wow.
A great school.
So
you
are immersed in creativity and with creative people.
Yes, absolutely, all the time. And, I mean, it's just an amazing environment. I mean, the movies, you know, like Grease and stuff like that, that's where a lot of those kids come from, you know, just performing art schools and Juilliard and stuff like that in New York, where it's just adult. You actually, you know, people be like, do that really happen in those schools? I'm like, yes. In the middle of the hallway, you might have a whole jazz band just playing out of nowhere, coming out of science class, and be like, hey, let's just jam real quick and just get your instruments out of your locker and let's just.
Wow. So you graduated and you went on to Duquesne?
Yes.
Why did you decide to stay home instead of going away?
Because, one, my family, I was really knitted to my family's ministry, and I was really indulged here ministry-wise. And number two, because Kappa, a lot of the teachers from Kappa was from the professors from Duquesne. Even city jazz band, there's a city jazz band and city call that a lot of the teachers were connected to Duquesne. So even before Kappa, we was already hearing the word Duquesne University and, you know, let's be a part of that. And so it was a great school. Even my wife today, right now, she's getting her master's in nursing from Duquesne. It's just a great school.
Yeah. Well, I graduated 42 years ago, and the music program was great then. And it was well known and well respected. And now you said you were on tour. Were you traveling with your mom's ministry, or was this something else that you were on tour with? Tell us about that.
So by the age 19, 20, I was good enough to start going on tour with gospel artists. I still am a music director for Grammy Award winner Douglas Miller. John P. Key and several other artists, national recording artists. That's one of the reasons why I stayed home as well, because my family wanted me to still have a foundation here while I was traveling a lot. As a young kid, I was still young. I was 19, 20 and stuff like that. So I would get on the bus or get on the plane, and they would ship me here, and I had to be back home for church that Sunday morning and stuff like that. And then make sure school was done and stuff like that. So I needed to have a base. I found my mom and dad was not liking me trying to be out of town for school and be on the road, and it wasn't a good thing. So I stayed home, and it worked out well.
Did it? I was just gonna say, did you chafe against that, or did you see the wisdom of it and just flow with it?
I did want to go to Howard University. I definitely did. My mom took me down to Howard University. I mean, as soon as I hit the campus, I heard music coming out of the one building, and it was just amazing. And I was just like, oh, this is me. I can deal with it. Of course, me being an African-American man and being all African-American school, you know, I was just like, oh, this is me. I love to hear it. And I went to the restroom the one time I was down there, and, I mean, the guy, he was just singing away in the restroom, And he was just a clarinet major. I mean, he was just, I mean, it was a major talent. And but there, we went around the corner, and there was this big wind of marijuana that just came out of the other building. And my mom was like, "Oh, nope, we're going home." And you know, I was like, "Oh no!" I was like, "Oh, my dreams just got shut down." So, but I did. My heart was set on D.C. At the same time, there was a ministry that was willing to pay for my schooling down there to be their minister of music down there as well at the age of 18. So I was like, oh, man, this is my big time and everything. And my mom and dad was real big on making sure that my head didn't get big and I didn't lose away from one, from God and my relationship with God, even though my talents was growing, my gifts was growing. But they was making sure that I had a foundation and that I kept that straight ahead. And I'm grateful for that today because now I made some good decisions where I could say, okay, if I would have went down that road, I would have probably not be where I'm at today.
Right. So mom and dad, well, they've obviously done a great job, and we're appreciative of that. What was life on the road like? What were you doing? And you know, what when we say you go on tour, we see these concerts. What does that mean? What's your role? What's life like? Talk to us a little bit
about
that.
Well, that is getting off a plane. Well, I'll start before I even get on the plane. That is rehearsing here alone countless hours, maybe 10 to 12 songs. Then you get on wherever, because most of the time when you're on tour, musicians and singers are all from different cities and states. So
right.
you find a meeting place, you travel to that meeting place, you have maybe a day to rehearse all 10 to 12 songs, get on the bus or get on that plane, go to the place. At that time, when I first started, I wasn't the band leader or the music director. I was just the lead keyboard player, but I wasn't the music director. Mm-hmm. The music director was taking care of everything from teaching the parts to making sure that the people got the rider together, to making sure that the venue was together, to make sure that we got all the equipment that we needed, all the arrangements was together. But I was just the guy that was just playing either the piano or the organ, making sure that my part was together. We would travel from 1 year we just did the East Coast side from all the way down from New York, Baltimore, Philly, Pittsburgh, Atlanta. I mean, we did end in Virginia. So we did like the East side of DMV side of 1 year where that was probably the smallest tour that I did, where it was just one side of the country, maybe 7 to 10 cities where we would do maybe two shows per city, maybe one at a church and one at a theater, depending on who was the artist and how big was his ticket sales or if he had a project coming out or something like that. It was fun, but a lot of work because you would have to know your material on and off. And being a young kid, it was pretty cool because, you know, this is kind of like the thing that you drive of. But now you definitely wouldn't want to do it trying to be a music director of a church with five services.
because you
have to have leeway. You have to have leeway.
Yeah. Did you enjoy life on the road?
I definitely did. Sometimes I do miss it because, you know, it was just fun. You get to see things. You get to meet people.
Right.
There are people sometimes you might think you're the best of cream crop, and you hear somebody else and like, wow, that was really great. Can you do that all over again? You know, so you get to expand your borders, expand your sound, and just hear different cultures. You know, even go down south. South has a different sound than north and Midwest and West Coast, so it's different cultures, and you get to see different, even the beauty of the earth. You know, I would never forget just being on the road and looking out the window and be like, wow, there's red dirt here, you know, or, you know, just the culture of food. I love food, as small as I am, as skinny as everybody laughs at me being, but I love to eat, and I'm just like, oh, these fried frog legs is wonderful, you know, so I would get it here in Pittsburgh, but, you know, it's not real frog legs until you get it to New Orleans, you know. So
I understand.
it's a great thing to travel. I love to travel.
Yeah. What did you major in at Duquesne?
By that time, I was a piano major.
Okay.
Yep, I was a piano major. I didn't graduate from Duquesne because by that time I was touring, and by the time I got off tour, I was starting to be a youth pastor at a church in Aliquippa. So I toured for 2.5 years. Let me see, so that was like 2008, 2009, I started being a youth pastor in a church in Aliquippa, which was the end of my tour.
Did you like youth pastoring?
Yes, I love it. Yep, I loved it. I love ministry. One thing I do appreciate the Pentecostal background is it pushed me to do more than what I was gifted to do. I had to learn to serve. I had to learn to serve and not just be the special kid on the instruments. And you know, I had to learn to serve and clean the toilets and back in the sanctuary and teach Sunday school. And, if I had to teach Bible study or just pick up kids or, whatever duty calls, you know, if my grandfather or my father or any of my parents would say, hey, Mike, you need to do this or sit right here and watch me do this because one day you're going to do this. You know, I had to learn that, and that was the background that I grew up in. And so when, you know, ministry calls, I have a broader mindset than just music scale.
Yeah. What church were you with in Aliquippa?
Miracle Church. It's right around the corner from the Grand Church around where Bishop Clark is. It's a nice ministry. Pastor Fisher is now the pastor there.
Yeah, I used to go up to Church in the Round in my early days of meeting the Lord when they had their... their ministry was May I Present Jesus to You.
That's right.
Yeah, and then they had their annual conference. So I heard Jesse Windley and others minister used to go up, get out at 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. And Bishop Clark is a character. He made me laugh every time I was with him. He is quite a personality. And so you did that for a couple of years. What did you do after your youth ministry stint in Aliquippa?
So I came back to Pittsburgh, and I became the music director of Central Baptist Church District.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, Pastor Grisby, my very good friend. And, of course, that's where my wife is from. She's from Central Baptist Church. My grandmother and her great-grandmother sang in the choir together for almost 40 years. And we just sent her home to the Lord 2 weeks ago, and she was 95. So there's a great lineage there. The great Dr. Martin Luther King did his speech there when he came to Pittsburgh. So there's a great lineage there at Central. I think they're almost 137 years old. As a church, as a ministry. So I was the music director there, the choir, and actually me and my best friend, Curtis Lewis Jr., which is Dr. Curtis, who is the minister of music of Church and Around. We both tag teamed there at Central. He was there before me, and then I came in 3 years ago at Central and became the music director there, which was a great, a great experience of just historic Baptist church. You know, it's just major history there.
Sure.
Great.
Yeah. Did you find it difficult as a young man to command the kind of respect or attention as the director of music, or did you find your talent and your lifelong growing up working in a church was enough and carried the day?
Sometimes they would challenge when they felt their tradition or rituals were being changed, but they never challenged my skill level. But the great thing about my background was the fact of I have older parents, and my grandfather is 91, so it kind of made me understand the older generation, what they how to respect them, one, how to talk to them, communicate with them, to not make them feel like that you're disrespecting their lineage and their ways of doing things and stuff like that. So once I got that rhythm together, it was well on. I built relationships just by communicating with them and just hanging around there and understood what the, you know, because especially in that church, they're real big on hymns, you know, and it made me just, you know, grow on hymns and learn hymns more and more and more. You know, there's not a Sunday or a service that you won't hear on hymn. And so even in bringing me in, which brings a whole new diversity and bring all this new sound to a ministry of a church like that, I still had to be a bridge and build a gap from new to old and be able to feel and make everybody feel welcome.
Mm-hmm. And you were there for how long, and did you come to ACAC from Central?
Yes, I came. I was there for 3.5 years, and I came from ACAC from Central. But, I mean, I was, being that my grandmother was there, I was pretty much like family to Central. You know, it just so happened that they put me as a staff member, an employee there. But they knew me since my mom was in the belly because, you know, my mom, before she married my dad, she was a part of Central as a child herself. So, you know, when my mom was pregnant with me, they'd be like, oh, she had a, that's Mike, oh, that's Francis' son, you know. So that's, they put it all together and was like, oh, wow, what, we wouldn't expect nothing else because they knew my grandmother and was like, oh, she had that high soprano voice. Of course, you're going to be gifted because that was your grandma's, you know. So
yeah.
I was pretty much already like a son of the ministry there. And so it wasn't like I was a stranger to them. It was just once I became in a role of leadership, they had to switch their mindset to, oh, that's little baby Michael, to, oh, that's my music director, you know.
Now, you've not, I'll put it in quotes, gone Pentecostal. You're now in an Alliance church. You were in a Baptist church. Your family okay with that, or would they have preferred that you would have stayed in a Pentecostal stream?
No, they're fine. One thing is they feel, my grandfather says to the mother, she's like, wherever the Lord lead you based off of the foundation of the Word of God that we placed inside of you is what we want to happen. We don't want you to feel like you have to take our path, but we believe that the Holy Spirit that's inside of you will lead you to where you need to go for based off of the foundation that we placed in you. So, and this was the, one of the things that they had to come in grips with been at 18 years old because they saw my gift just start sprouting up so fast and so and largely in different venues and different places and different people calling and people that they don't necessarily even agree with, but they saw that maybe the light that God has placed inside of Michael will shine in different places that we were never able to be able to reach. And so they're looking at it as that.
Have they been to ACAC to see you?
My mom and dad has, my grandfather hasn't, but my mom and dad, they're like, hey, you know, we love it. And we think, you know, this is a great move. And because especially for, you know, we told them we wanted to be around a diverse culture, you know, because my friends are diverse. If you look at all my different friends and stuff like that, you won't just see a black crew or a white crew. You will see all different type of people just around me, just based off of because of the career that I have. And you know, some are bankers, some are computer IT guys, some are, you know, preachers, some are musicians, some are white, some are black, some are, you know. So you get all type of people with me, and the way my personality is, I could get along with anybody, as long as, you know, you don't take my food, you know. So I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good with pretty much anybody.
Don't take your frog legs,
No,
okay.
Don't do it.
I'm learning a lot here. Tell us about your wife.
Her name is Amber, and she is definitely built for Michael Day. I, of course, like I said, I met her there at Central We've been knowing each other since we was younger, but when she came home and graduated from college, she graduated from Loyola University in Maryland. She came back home in 2007, and I was like, whoa, who is that? I haven't seen her almost 4 or 5 years since she was away in Maryland. And she came back home, and I said to my sister, I said, is that Amber? And she was like, yeah, that's a little Amber. And I was like, whoa. And that summer, I said, you're going to cook me dinner one day. And so she was like, boy, please, I don't even cook myself dinner. And sure enough, almost, well, it would be 5 years later from that day, but 7 years later today, she's my wife. So it was great. She is the middle child of five, but she's like she's the oldest girl. So she's a smart, brilliant girl. She graduated with a bachelor's of science, and now, like I said, she's getting her RN, master's RN in Duquesne to be a nurse practitioner.
So she's not in nursing now?
She is she's in nursing, but she's going to keep to keep going for a nurse practitioner.
Okay. All righty. So you come to ACAC, and what is your exact title at the church?
Music director.
Yep. You're the music director. What's your typical week look like at ACAC? What do you do to get ready for, and how do you get ready for Sundays?
Oh, Pastor John, that's a question that is so broad because it changes every week.
but typically, your schedule, like Monday, do you take off?
Monday, I force myself off. I turn everything off. Tuesdays, we have meetings galore, staff meetings with the worship department. We go over what went well, what didn't go well, and that's with everybody on in the music department, worship department staff. Mm-hmm. From choir directors, some worship leaders, our audio video visual guys, our IT guys, everybody that's on deck is in that meeting. Went well on stage, off stage, in different venues. We talk about that, and then we do the next week of planning or the next weekend planning to make that better. And how can we get better on that? And always trying to advance the ministry from what we did or what we didn't do from last week and to make it better. So that's Tuesday. Wednesday, we have ministry team meeting with all our different ministry team leaders of the campus as a whole, from student ministry, children's ministry, care connections, different audit departments, department heads, and we have meetings with Pastor Rock and Pastor Sheldon and Pastor Blaine, and used to be you. I miss your face there. So,
thank you.
Absolutely, you was like a spark in the room. That's Wednesday, and then we go back downstairs and plan more based off of that meeting and any corrections that you guys we would talk about in that room. By that time, I'm starting to prepare myself for a rehearsal on Thursday with the worship leader, and choir rehearsal is that Wednesday night, but I'm preparing music for Thursday night for worship team and the praise team and worship leaders and the band on Thursdays. So by Thursday morning, I'm walking in the office, preparing myself, learning any material that I need to learn for rehearsal that night, getting the music and sheet music together for the orchestra, and getting the music together for the band and the worship teams, and going over slides with the graphic designers and graphic operators, making sure the slides is good, making sure that the venues, each venue has their music together. Union Praise, which is our chapel service, making sure our teams is together, because sometimes the worship teams, based off of Planet Center, which is a scheduling network, if we get a denied from somebody can't make it if they're sick or something of sort, we replace them. So we make sure that all our are people from musicians and singers and orchestra players are all on ready for rehearsals the next that night and make sure that they're there for Sunday and Saturday
wow.
services.
Wow. Wow. Do you
and then Friday
do you still...
we're doing any
Go
recording.
Ahead. Good.
Fridays
yeah.
we're doing
Friday.
Any recording and
mm-hmm.
Tighten up anything that we didn't finish for Thursday. And if anything changes on Thursday, we'll change it on Friday and make sure we're good for Saturday and Sunday.
Wow. So it's a lot of hours. It's not part of the heavenly Jerusalem. It just doesn't descend from on high, does it?
No. You definitely have to. There's a lot of administrative work. And that was one of the things that I have grown to learn to do because a person like me, I'm a visionary, I'm creative. I can just say,
sure.
okay, this is what it looked like, you know,
sure.
let's hit the floor, let's hit the stage, and let's go with it. And coming to ACAC, it taught me to be way more administrative savvy to make sure that, you know, everybody, because it is a machine that God has blessed the ministry with, just to make sure that we have everything we need to make sure that it continues to do what it needs to do.
Do you still find time or take time to practice, I mean, individually, or is that something you just kind of do because you're so immersed in your music all the time?
Yes, I have to find time. I force myself. At the beginning stages of me coming to ACAC, not necessarily I had time because I was trying to learn the machine called
right.
ACAC. at the same time,
oh, yes.
I was trying to maintain learning ACAC and maintain my personal endeavors and obligations that I had
mm-hmm.
personally. So I didn't necessarily have time. But now that I got the swing of things and I got it kind of swinging the way that I swing, so it works out well. At the same time, I always try to learn better because especially music is always evolving. It always
mm-hmm.
grows. It's always changing, even though it sounds like it's coming full circle of how it all began, but it's always going to a whole nother level of either if it's technology or just sound-wise. I mean, I was playing at a high skill level at 18, and these kids nowadays is playing at 15 and 14,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you could get replaced by a 14-year-old just by skill level
mm-hmm.
if you're not practicing and being relevant on your craft. So I forced myself just to keep playing and being around music all the time and just try to be around things that's outside of my comfort zone to keep me growing, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I have to.
Yeah. Do you think you'll ever finish up Duquesne or someplace else, or isn't that really critical to what you do?
I'm thinking about going back. I'm trying to get a feel of, you know, what my wife is going to be doing because she's trying
mm-hmm.
to have a baby now. So I'm trying to feel how that's going to swing.
Congratulations. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm trying to see how that's going to work, you know, see if this is going to pan out. I would love to finish out online and do a few courses, majority online,
mm-hmm.
but do a few courses on the campus just because I miss the campus as a whole. Sometimes I just go up there just to check it out, but
right,
I just
right.
want to be able to finish it out. And move on to another degree or something like that.
Yeah. Now, you said you're going to do some studio work tonight. Are you still involved somewhat in the community with other music groups, musicians? What's
yes.
your involvement
yes.
at that level?
Well, since 2010, I had my own production company we have 1, 2, 3... we put out 4 different projects from 4 different artists already.
Mm-hmm.
This will be, and from different genres, from gospel, of course, one's jazz, one's R&B. This one is Christian hip-hop tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is more of it's kind of like a neo-soul gospel type of feel. So those 4 albums is done, and we got two going on this year, maybe 3, if the artist gets the funding for it. But I have my own production company since 2010, and from Pittsburgh, there was a group of us that just came together and was just like, hey, let's do this. And we just put other artists out that have the talent and the ambition and just the zeal to work at it. So that's what we do. Now, sometimes I write or I compose or arrange music for different people around the country, but majority of it is coming from Pittsburgh, just because Pittsburgh is just full of talent that is like, it's like a hidden gold mine. So that's
Do you have a goal for any personal projects? Do you see yourself having a piano or a jazz or, you know, some type of recording that you put out?
I put out two Christmas albums. One, actually, when I first came on to ACAC, I was just finishing up my second Christmas album.
Okay.
It's called Joyful Noise 2. It's on iTunes and Amazon and Spotify. Mm-hmm. And then there's Joyful Noise 1. That came out in 2010 when we first started the production company. That was the launch of the production company, Joyful Noise. So, yeah, somebody asked me already, are you going to do another album or what are you going to do? And so I've been thinking about it, but I really like pushing other people's vision. I really like to see other people doing it because I could do it. I mean, I could set up a whole session in my house and put out an album in a month. But I'd rather see and push others who maybe not have the the ability to have access to certain things or have just the know-how to get a CD going or a project going, you know, even the marketing. Because, I mean, you could have the best CD in the world and nobody know about it. So just to be a part of the creative part of somebody else's project,
yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I've started a publishing company. We've put out a couple of books, and we're working on five more, and I'm with you. I'm really enjoying, you know, thank you. Coming alongside people and helping them see their creative projects and babies be born and hold them and enjoy them. And so it's and I've been told that producing an album and writing a book are very similar. They turn you inside out, and it's an all-consuming project that you have to give your attention to, and it can't wait when you're up on a deadline or you want to get it out. You got to get it done, and so everything kind of grinds to a halt so you can work on that. So now I'm going to ask you a question probably not focused enough or maybe not even fair, but what musicians, what music groups, what music, I mean, who moves your needle? Who impresses you or challenges you to worship or to get better or to learn or to grow? Share with us some of your encounters that are meaningful for you.
Well, I'll start in genres. For the Christian gospel CCM side of things, I grew up hearing like the Douglas Millers. I mean, Douglas Miller been out almost since the 70s and 80s. I mean, he had hits from the 80s, but I listened to his music from. He had great musicians like Thomas Whitfield, which is big jazz cats from New Orleans and Florida and down south. These guys were just playing all day, every day for everybody, just in the studio for everybody. So I grew up listening to them, some Shirley Caesar stuff, and just a lot of, in that time from 80s and 90s where the gospel music was becoming more inventive, where they wasn't necessarily just sounding like a Mahalia Jackson or a Down at the Cross hymn. It was really becoming more synthesized and more hit heavy, Earth, Wind, and Fire type of feel, which, you know, grew us to where we are now. That was the gospel feel. Speaking of Earth, Wind, and Fire, I mean, these guys are still relevant today, and I mean, they're 70s and almost 80 years old guys that's just still, you know, they're really great musicians and composers and arrangers. You know, these guys, I mean, today we arrange stuff based off of their horn lines, and sometimes we sample their music. We sample their music in hip-hop songs, and, I mean, it's just really great stuff. So Earth, Wind & Fire and jazz groups like Yellow Jackets and Chick Corea and, you know, pianists like Oscar Peterson and Duke Ellington and just this, Billy Cobham and just all these different great jazz musicians that were just like, wow. Sometimes they was before their time, which is still stuff that people are still trying to figure out what they're doing today, which is relevant for today. It was just great stuff, genius type of stuff. Like, wow, that was really awesome.
Yeah, you know, I used to run the road with Integrity Music. I used to coordinate their worship tours with Ron Canole and Don Moen, and we travel with guys like Abraham Laboriel and, you know, Justo Amarillo, and just some really, really great musicians. So
I know that was amazing.
Oh, my goodness. We did cruises with them, you know, and they'd bring their families. And these guys were so spiritually grounded, Alex Acuna and Chester Thompson. And it was a phenomenon. It was just God opened an opportunity when Integrity came along, and then Don Moen, and then Ron Canole, and Alvin Slaughter.
Yeah.
And there I would be introducing them, you know, like I was somebody. I was ignorant as a clam, but I opened the meetings, I took the offering, I sold some product, and it was, to this day, was the greatest ministry experience. We would travel not just the country, but the world. We'd go for 3 weeks to Europe or to Australia, New Zealand, all over Asia. You know, were you ever out of the country? Did you ever tour out?
Jamaica, Bahamas, Mexico.
Okay.
I haven't been to Europe yet, so I'm on my way there some way, form, or fashion.
Sure.
I can feel it. You know,
yeah,
but I definitely,
well,
want to do something there.
They will love you. They love jazz. They love artists of color. Of course, that's been wonderful opportunities in France and other places over the decades where African Americans who were not honored here went there, and many moved there, many of your artists and your authors and what have you. So, that'll be a great experience for you. Well, Michael, I know you're busy. I'm going to let you go. I just wanted to get something in the can, so to speak, so that we've had a lot of people listen to John Walton's interview, because you guys minister every week, and we don't know that much about you. So we wanted to get some information out there. Anything I missed? Anything else you'd like to tell anybody about you, or anything else you'd like to say about your time at ACAC?
I appreciate you asking for me to be on this interview. Anytime I'll come back and talk about another subject. You know, I'm an open book, so I love doing this type of stuff. So,
I hear you.
You know, I drive off of just, you know, sharing and learning.
Sure.
You know, I wish I would have met you through Integrity, because I'm sure that I would have. Or I still can learn from that experience, because that's a great entity right there. That's a great enterprise.
Yeah, I mean, we would hit the road with 17, a team of 17. I'd have to do all the logistics. We take our own audio tech people all our background singers, and then a lot of the songwriters were also musicians, so we'd mix and match teams, and oh my goodness, it was when we first started, you know, they were so skeptical of me because I wasn't a musician, but then when they saw how much fun we had, and I paid everybody on time, and it was ministry,
We'd
go to Philippines and we'd be on national television. We'd have 17,000 people. One night I couldn't get Don Moen into the arena for his own concert. The traffic and the people were so intense because it was just a day that God opened the windows, and there hasn't been a day like it since. But a lot of the ministries that are going on today can look back to the encouragement that Integrity gave, because before then there wasn't much out there.
Right.
Once that came along, people had a vision of, hey, we can produce our own, and of course it got simpler and easier to do that. And so I look back, and we still get together. Marty Nystrom, who wrote As the Deer, and Kent Henry, and Bob Fitz from Hawaii.
Yeah, yeah.
We still get together, and it's the good old days, because we have a lot of common stories to share. And a guy like you, because I took guys from Pittsburgh. We would bring our keyboards, we would bring our keyboardists, our guitarists, and we built our teams. And when that concert began, it wasn't preaching. It was just a two-hour worship time. It was a special spiritual experience. So maybe one day we'll get to do it, Michael. So in the meantime, you have a wonderful session tonight. We hope everything goes well. I think I speak for everybody who has been blessed to sit under your ministry and in front of your ministry to watch you week in and week out, see your anointing, your giftedness. We appreciate it. And as a preacher,
thank you.
Enhances what I do and makes my job easier. And so thank you so much. We look for
many
fruitful years to come.
Thank you so much, Pastor John.
All righty. You take care. And give my love to Amber.
Yes, yes. You too.
All righty. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, bye-bye.
All right, there we have Michael Day, our director of music at ACAC. What a fine young man. What a great story. God, geez, to be that gifted and that young and have had that many experiences already. Oh, well, God does not create all men equal. There are some that he gives a few more gifts than others. Well, I know we went over, and I planned on it, and because you have to schedule the time, but I knew with Pastor Sheldon coming on, and then having Brother Michael on, we were going to go a little over. So I trust that you've enjoyed this time. I sure did. I am going to go back and listen because I want to get those notes off what Pastor Sheldon said. And I want to see you if you're listening live or within a couple days of this broadcast. I want to see you Sunday night, 6 o'clock at Allegheny Center Alliance Church in the Sanctuary, where we will have a panel discussion on living in a racialized society. And I'll be posting on Facebook those who we have coming to be a part of the team. But we trust that you'll be there to be a part of the team. My thanks to Michael, to Pastor Sheldon, to all of you for listening. This is John Stanko, your host for Ministry Beat. You have a good week, and we will see you around campus. You be well. Take care.
Thanks again for listening to this week's edition of Ministry Beat with your host, John Stanko. Join us again next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the ACAC Internet Radio Network for more interviews and insight into the life of Allegheny Center Alliance Church. You can also access this show by going online to www.blogtalkradio/ACAC Threads. Thank you, and tell your friends about Ministry Beat.